Honey, I'm going out. I'll be back in a couple hours.
You play Farmville and call yourself a gamer.
You said awesome, and I said I hate it.
Okay, so here we go. This is where the extended knowledge comes in.
Don't mind me. I'm just staring at a wall somewhere.
Can anyone afford Benedict Cumberbatch?
That's surprising.
I don't think a human could make those sounds.
Yeah, well, you can do it, though, can't you?
Yeah, I get it.
Hi, I'm Dean.
And I'm Hester Paul.
Oh, I thought you'd actually go for Paulie Shore, but nah, anyways. Oh,
Paulie Shore.
Yeah, you could have done that. That would have been pretty good, anyway. But anyways. Mm. Anyways, and I'm Jason. Welcome to Nerds Before Birds, the podcast where you'll find reviews, rankings, and general discussion on all things pop culture. This week, we're going to have a look at the new film Mortal Engines, directed by Christian Rivers and produced by Peter Jackson. Yeah. Jackson.
Jackson.
It's the Sean Connery version of Peter Jackson.
Hot shingles in my area.
Yeah, hot shingles. The film follows the character of Hester Shaw in a future world of mechanical cities that devour other cities. Before getting into the plot details, let's get our initial thoughts out of the way. And if you're new to this podcast, we have a rating system of either flipping the bird, which is less than 2.5 birds, or soaring like an eagle, which is the best result, and that's 2.5 and above birds.
Well, now, yeah. Are we including the middle, or have I just sort of cut your sentence in half and you were just about to say that exact thing?
No, I don't even know what I was going to say because I haven't actually read through this little spiel yet.
You have a writer that does all your work for you.
Average ostrich.
Yeah.
It's canon.
Yeah. Average ostrich.
Average ostrich is like a 2.5. It's not good. It's not bad. It's a movie.
Yeah, it's a movie. It's a sort of like a meh kind of movie. It's not like a terrible thing, but it's not either. So that's like the middle ground. But so you either want to soar like an eagle or, well, you don't want to flip the bird. But that's our rating system. So each week we give our final bird rating out of 5 birds at the end of the podcast. So stick around to the end to find out what those ratings are.
If you're new to the podcast, we do birds. We do flip the bird or whatever. If you're Dean, also, we do birds. We don't do stars.
Yes.
We do
birds. Yeah, we've only been doing it for 30 episodes now.
I feel like this overlong explanation is just for me to try to make me understand all the rules.
Who do you think is tuning in at this point?
Yeah. Nobody.
No one.
We never get any new listeners.
No.
It's fun that you believe that this will help.
Anyways, Dean, what do you think of this movie? Does it flip the bird or does it soar like an eagle? Mortal Engines. That's what we're talking about.
Oh, man. All right. It definitely met my expectations.
Okay. That's not good.
As in, I really think it solidly flipped the bird.
Wow.
Really?
You don't like anything anymore, do you? What's happened to you?
Yeah, I hate everything. No.
Sounds like
okay,
it.
Okay, I had no expectations going into this movie.
And they weren't exceeded at all.
And they weren't exceeded. They were at the start. I was like, ooh, if this is what the movie's going to be, then yeah, awesome. I'm going to love it. And then it just plummeted straight after. I was like, oh no, yeah, no, I was right. This movie is going to be pretty sucky.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, visually though, amazing.
Yeah.
Yep. Beautiful.
That's fair.
Really cool. When it's not people acting.
Yeah, what about you, Paul?
I went into this with lower expectations somehow than Dean.
Yeah.
The vibe I got from the trailer that made me very concerned about this movie was that it felt very Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah,
it felt too big, too reliant on VFX. And I can happily say I was wrong. I enjoyed it. I actually like this movie. I had a great time.
Cool.
There are a lot of moments where I was like, "Oh, yeah, let's go."
Yeah.
So I think it's odd.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll change what I said. Like to me, I thought that it's better than Jupiter Ascending, and yeah, cheers. I was better than Jupiter Ascending, and therefore it exceeded my expectations slightly.
Again, I thought anything if better. You're new to this podcast, by the end of each episode, Dean rates the movie slightly higher than what he does at the very beginning.
Welcome to an hour and a half of us trying to convince Dean that a movie's good.
We really want this to be a short episode, so I'm changing it straight away.
Yeah. So is it soaring like an eagle now?
We'll see.
Yeah. We'll see.
I might change my mind several times. We'll see.
For me,
what did you think, Jace?
It soars like an eagle for me. I enjoyed this movie. I had a lot of fun there. I can understand what you're saying, Dean. I can understand that you kind of never really got on board with it, and that's fair because it is a hard movie to get on board with. I feel because really there are a lot of things in this movie that just kind of don't. They don't make sense. Like, there's a lot of things that are just a little bit weird and a little bit stupid. Mm-hmm. But we'll get into that. I suppose the biggest thing for me that I didn't ever really buy into, and it's really fundamental for the movie, and that's the actual mechanical cities. And I just can't see that working.
Really?
And I never. Yeah, I think that's where my biggest fault for this movie. If you can sort of look past that, I think, which is a big thing because it is the general premise of the movie. If you can look past that, you'll have a lot of fun with this movie. But if you can't,
everything in this movie is scientifically accurate at all. Like it's a very realistic movie. I can't believe you.
I know.
Found anything quite unbelievable about
I know,
it.
I know. It's very hard. Like, you know, I need everything to be exactly scientifically accurate because I just have to pick apart at the really smallest little flaws in anything. Because, you know, yeah. But, yeah, that's our initial thoughts out of the way. We're going to get just quickly into the actual plot of this movie. So there will be some spoilers coming up. So be warned, if you haven't seen this film, probably jump out now because
go
we're going
to.
Yeah, well, okay, go and see
I'll
it.
Oh, wait. Wait till it's on Netflix.
Go see it first. No. Go listen to him. He's jaded and old. Go and see it. Make up your own mind. Be your own person. You don't even need to listen to this podcast, but please do.
Mom. And if you don't, support us on Patreon.
Mum, I haven't heard from you for a week. I just hope you're well.
That's it. That's the reason. My mum embarrassed me on Facebook and that I hate
that was hilarious.
No, that was so funny.
Oh,
I
what
love
a
it.
Scathing oh, review, goodness. But I loved it.
If you're listening right now, just jump onto our Facebook page and have a look at some of Dean's mum's comments. She's really supportive of the show.
Look, also, if you're new, this is the first time listening, please follow us on Facebook, you know, subscribe, like, give us a like. If we get more followers, then we can delete certain other ones. We can block our mothers, which I really, really want to do. Yeah.
Nerds before mothers.
Anyways, left so getting the nest. Back to Mortal Engines. So the story goes, following the 60-minute war, humanity rebuilds in the forms of Predator cities, which are the large mechanical moving cities.
Shut up, Dane.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
Continue. I will stop my smirk.
Wait,
and snickering.
Real quick. Do they all reform into Predator cities?
No. They're
some
like,
of them are scavenger
smaller
cities.
Smaller settlements, and then there's also the larger cities. So there's London and Europe are the two big ones. But for the most part, they're like smaller settlements that are still mechanized, though.
Post-Brexit, London will become a land, across the land bridge.
Yes. It is. This is basically just the exactly how they're going to be able to actually enable Brexit to actually occur.
Yeah, it's a physical manifestation of Brexit.
It's like the rest of Europe is fine. Yeah. Nothing has changed.
No.
Just Britain has picked up and gone.
Yeah, it's just driven away.
Let's just go and kill Bavarians. Because why not? Yeah. YOLO. Yeah.
Taking things too literally.
Yeah.
Carry on, Jason.
Anyways, so in this version of the future, the philosophy is of what is this word?
Cool. Municipal. You're right.
Yeah, municipal Darwinism. That's it. Municipal Darwinism. Yep. And it's adopted by the new civilization in which the larger cities hunt and absorb smaller settlements. There's this opposing force known as the Anti-Traction League, which are basically static settlements that choose to not become the new mechanized form of cities, and they actually stay like normal cities, basically. So after a small mining town is captured by the City of London, a masked woman named Hester Shaw finally gets her chance to assassinate Thaddeus Valentine, the man responsible for her mother's death and the head of the Guild of Historians in London.
He's not the head of the Historians Guild?
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's the head of energy.
No, he's the head of the...
Is he?
Same
thing.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah.
Wow. Blow me down. My
yeah, that's why. That's why he had all the access to all the ancient technology and that. And that's why he's going through all the rubble. Like when they're actually taking them on board, and he's going through all their old tech.
He's just a dude.
No, no, that's what his actual title was. But yeah, so that character is played.
He is
a dude. Yeah, yeah. That character is played by Hugo Weaving. And he's basically playing like another version of every other bad guy he's ever played. Like I feel like he's a blend between the growliness of Megatron and the sort of just sternness of Agent Smith. He just doesn't
the bit
really
of the fashion sense of Elrond as
Oh yeah, there is. There's definitely that. And there's so many like references and sort of like nods to Lord of the Rings in that kind of world.
You prefer a fashion sense like Lord Elrond than a fashion sense like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Hey, Ace. That's pretty good.
I mean, he could do that. It's future. Yeah,
there is a bit of that. Like when they're, you know, later on doing the whole bargaining thing.
Oh yeah,
that's true.
There was. It's like, oh look, we've now hit the Australian city, Bougainville. This is
there was Bougainville, and then it felt very Matrixy when she joined up with like the Anti-Traction League later on. I felt
Anna Fang.
I just felt like they were very like it felt like they just stepped straight into like the second Matrix movie or something like that.
It was very unapologetically Matrix. Like the glasses, the leather, the moves, the guns. It's like
this is true. We're jumping ahead.
Yeah,
did you have
that's
any more?
Yeah, that's
sorry. Carry
right
on,
down
Jason.
Path.
But anyway, so municipal Darwinism.
We've got Hester Shaw. She's she's coming on board London, and she sees Thaddeus, who is responsible for killing her mother, and she attempts to kill him, but. Just as she's about, well, actually, she does stab him. She goes to actually finish him off. Tom Natsworthy, an apprentice historian, intervenes, saving the life of Thaddeus.
What a good kid.
Yeah.
What a good name.
Thaddeus. It is a cool name.
It's up there with English names. It's like Thaddeus Valentine is right up there with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's definitely. Yeah. And it's got like that flow to it as well. Like it just has that.
Yeah, like you can say it without moving your bottom lip. Thaddeus.
All right.
I just moved my bottom lip.
No, I can't do it.
Thaddeus Valentine.
Apparently, neither can I.
So Shaw then attempts to escape London and is followed by Tom and Thaddeus, who's close behind. Thaddeus. Tom catches Hester just as she's about to like jump into it's like a garbage chute or something like that, right? It's like a compost chute of some sort. I don't really know. It's just whatever.
It's the gravel ejection from all of the sucking up.
The butthole of the city.
Yeah, bottle.
Yeah, it's the butthole.
Yeah. So she's
because
about
they
jump
sucked
out
up
there.
All the rocks when they pulled in the city, the town.
Oh, okay.
So that's just the ejection chamber, also known as the butthole.
The butthole. Yeah.
The butthole.
Yeah, it's the sphincter of London.
All the non-metal things.
Yeah.
Like objects.
Like
people, all the non-metal objects.
It's and people. Almost like the cushioning of non-metal objects because it's like the cushion ejection seats because she's not even like what do you call it? Like, she's not even scathed or anything. Like, she's not even hurt by the time she gets out of there.
Oh, right. As in, it's all padded.
Yeah, it's just all padded. It's mud. She seems fine. But
she
anyway.
Did a superhero landing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And she was fine.
That's probably what happened.
That's how it happened.
Yeah. That's
it.
Yeah. That's the cut scene is her landing just out the back of it, like a superhero.
yeah.
So oh, yeah. Tom catches up to her and she's just about to jump out of the butthole. And he's like, what are you doing? Why did you try to kill Thaddeus or whatever? And she's like, he killed my father. He's not the man you think
mother.
He is and all this. Oh, mother. Yeah, that's right. He is my father. But yeah, that's whoa. Pretty obvious.
Spoilers!
Jason. It's pretty obvious. Like, I don't know how that is a big twist. Like, she's got to be the dumbest person in the world to not know that he's the father. But anyways. Oh, yeah.
She's been through trauma, man.
Oh, that's true. She's been through trauma. Okay. We're getting ahead of ourselves. So she's like, okay, Thaddeus killed my mom and you've ruined my chance at getting back at him. I've been working 6 months to try and get to this place to kill him and you've ruined it. And then she jumps in the garbage chute. And then Thaddeus comes around the corner and he's like, hey, Tom, where'd she go? And he's like, she's gone. And Tom's like, hey, she said that you killed her mother. And then Thaddeus does almost, he's like evil sort of, ha, 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 yes, I did. And kicks him off the down the butthole as well.
And right there, he might as well have kicked me out the butthole too, because that's where I checked out of this movie. I was like, what the heck, man? Like, seriously, he's fully, you know, your bro. You can just be like, nah, that didn't happen.
He knew too much. I'd kick him out of the butthole.
He knew too much. Yeah. He was fully skeptic. You'd kick him out of the butthole.
The questions are there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there were other options for him.
Yeah.
He didn't have to be like, correct.
Besides not ejecting Tom.
It did seem a little bit like a little bit quick to jump to that conclusion to be like, yeah, you know what?
For sure.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just gonna kill you now too, kind of thing. Like it's a big leap. And you kind of think he could have at least taken a moment and been like, no, that's not true. I don't know who she's talking about or who she was, kind of thing. Like,
the whole relationship happens in the space of about 5 minutes. And yet you're meant to, like, you're inclined to believe that it's been like some sort of relationship of years. It was like, oh, we just met. You're cool. Oh, thank you. I'll be your bro. Oh, she said this about you. Oh, see you later.
That's right.
Too like, quick. Yeah. The whole thing, too quick.
Then like, do you believe him? Oh, no. Mm. Right? Yeah. He's like, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah.
And there is also the scene that's like just before this where Tom basically worships Thaddeus. And I kind of think that like if someone's sort of blindly following a character for so long and thinking they're the best thing in the world, the moment that they hear of something like this, they might be skeptical, kind of thing. Like they wouldn't jump to that
exactly
conclusion.
My point.
So yeah. I understand your complaint there, but if there's a lot of things of leaps in logic that you have to have with this movie and this is just one of them. And if you can jump past this, you can enjoy the movie. So let's move along. So
okay.
Hester and Tom are soon picked up by some mole people. That's what I'm gonna call them. I don't know. Like they're underground kind
scatterbugs.
So they've got their own like little ship or something like that that looks like a little a bug of some sort. And
that's pretty cool.
A scuttlebug. they think that they're being rescued by these people, and it's pretty clear that they're not being rescued, but they're actually being imprisoned by these people, and they're taken to somewhere else. Where do you know where they go next?
They went to the marshlands.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bougainville. Yeah.
Straight to Bougainville.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that's where we're introduced to the slave trading. Is it a slave trading or is it like they're going to eat them?
Yes. No. Well, there were the sausage people who were going to eat them, but then there's also slave traders. It's both.
It's a meat raffle. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's a meat raffle. They basically went
like your local RSL club.
They went to the Wyoming RSL. They want a meat platter. Yeah. Going home.
That's so good.
Gonna slap on a little bit of Wheel of Fortune and off we go.
So Hester is just about to be won by some random guy, and then
you're gonna be so much better as a piece of salami.
Yeah,
and then so he's a cannibal.
Yeah. So that he's guy clearly, for sure. Yeah, he's clearly a cannibal. So and then Anna Fang intervenes and she does her own bidding war of her own kind by like killing everybody. And
it's viable.
Drives a hard bargain.
Yeah, she's yep. The highest price
at about Mach 1.
Yeah. And then we have
it was cool.
So they escape. And then we have a scene. I think I'm actually mixing up the order of events, but there is a scene with Hugo Weaving, Thaddeus Valentine. He's back in London.
Oh, yeah, that happens heaps earlier. Yeah,
it does. And
the prison
and,
thing.
Yeah, he hears about a character that is part of the old world and is like a they live forever or something. Do you remember what the actual term?
Yeah, he was one of the resurrected. Children of Lazarus, I think it was.
Yeah.
Or soldiers of Lazarus. Something to do with Lazarus because of the resurrection.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically they're humans that just kept being modified and modified and modified until they were robots and thus immortal.
Yeah.
And I kept
thinking of him as just the Terminator because he just looks like a Terminator and he walks like a Terminator. Dude, and
did you notice how many Terminator-ish things there were in this movie?
Oh, there was heaps.
Like the ships, they were fully like, I kept turning to my mate when I was watching them. I was like, oh, look at this. It's totally Terminator. And then the robot dude comes in and is like, wait,
it is Terminator.
Joking before, but it is Terminator. 100% Terminator.
How do you make a humanoid robot that's not a Terminator? Like, the downside to Terminator is did it so early that everything else that wants to be a robot human.
Every post-apocalyptic film with robots is Terminator.
I like these ones better. Yeah, definitely. I like the emotion and the really rad-ass green eyes.
I'll tell you what, he was probably my favorite thing about this movie, his whole story arc.
He's definitely my favorite thing about this movie, and this is the reason that I like this movie. Without this character in this movie, then I would not have liked this movie at all. So we're introduced to Shrike, who wants to kill Hester Shaw, and he repeatedly says he wants to kill Hester Shaw. Which doesn't really make sense until later on, I suppose. It sort of makes sense.
Such a red herring.
It is. Really it is. So Hugo Weaving unleashes him to the world so that he can go out and kill Hester Shaw.
By murdering thousands. Yeah. How many people? I think I've only just killed one person. Destroys an entire prison ship.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Spider Azkaban, basically.
Spider Azkaban is a great analogy. And also a kick-ass name that was for a band.
Spider Azkaban. Oh, my gosh.
So,
Arachnaban. I don't know.
So, then...
Yeah.
Then Hester Shaw and Tom and Anna all go to a cloud city in the middle of...
Yay!
Skyhaven.
Yeah, Skyhaven.
It's not a cloud city. It was all helium. It's a balloon city, technically.
Hey.
Mm, yeah.
There's a lot of Star Wars in this movie as well.
There's that as well. It does definitely feel like Star Wars. It feels like Cloud City in Empire Strikes Back.
Cloud City. Also,
it definitely does.
Luke Skywalker. What happens to Luke Skywalker in Empire? He falls down a butthole.
He does. Well,
you're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong there.
Okay, so that's just
Father twist.
So they go there and then things happen.
Shrike rocks up.
Yeah.
He steals a ship. You know, let me just... Shrike steals a shrimp Jason from the Marsh Village. They all go back to their air haven, where it's found out that Hester is the missing link in the plans to destroy the weapon that Hugo Weaving is building. That is the cheeky little thing. They think that Hugo is making an energy device that will make the city self-sufficient. Yeah. He is actually rebuilding one of the weapons that destroyed the world in the past, thus making London unstoppable. Shrike, having just stolen an aircraft, arrives at Skyhaven, where it was made very clear when Hester and her friends landed. No electronics.
And it's not Skyhaven, it's Airhaven, but anyways.
That's same thing. It's in the air. What is the sky? Think about it. What is the sky?
This is getting a little too deep for our podcast.
What is the sky?
Did you just have a stroke? What happened?
Don't make a spark, basically, is the rule for Skyhaven.
Oh, man, this is really dumb. Like, don't make a spark, I was like, okay, this whole thing's going to explode second.
And it does.
And of course it does. Oh, yeah. This movie is very predictable.
Here's the thing. Here's the kicker for this part. And it's why I didn't like it that much. I thought the scenery was awesome and it was well done. But Shrike goes there, creates a distraction by igniting part of this massive
balloon. By killing everyone.
Yeah, he kills everyone just so he can get to Hester and kill Hester. Mm-hmm. He realizes
and then immediately
that Hester is in love and decides, I'm not going to kill you. And it's a lovely moment, and he dies, and it's sad because you find out his whole story arc, which we'll get to.
Does he die, though?
Yeah, of course he dies. He gets blown up.
No, he doesn't.
Doesn't he?
Wait, what? He's back in the sequel that will probably never happen.
Books, I
guess. Yeah, his character's meant to be in the sequels.
They jump on Feng's ship and hook it out of there. Sad moment. But then you see this entire city igniting and blowing up behind them. And
you're like, as a very, very massive ask of the audience, you're meant to really feel bad for this character who's just killed.
He's just killed like 10, hundreds of people to kill one person, to not kill one person.
But he's sad.
I feel bad for the character because I think they set him up very well. He's sort of this tragic figure in the way of he's almost like childlike in his understanding of what right and wrong is, and and very naive in like what he's doing. He thinks that he's doing the right thing for her by relieving her of her pain. I can see what they were doing with the character, and I actually really appreciate it. And I think a lot of that comes out of Stephen Lang's performance because he's fantastic. Like, he's such a good actor. Very underrated, really good. And I'm looking forward to, again, his character that died in Avatar seems to be coming back in the sequel somehow. Just because I don't know, he's credited for the next four sequels or whatever it is, but I don't know how. But
he has a knack for coming back from the dead.
Seems to,
because he's in the next Avatar movies as well, isn't he? Even though his character died in the first one, he's credited as coming back for Avatar.
Are you joking? 2, 3, and 4.
I am not joking. Oh, really?
Literal words that just came out of his mouth.
I literally just said that.
I thought you were I was actually looking at Stephen Lang trying to figure out who he was, so I wasn't listening to you.
Yeah, I noticed.
Fun little bit of trivia, though. Yeah. Fun bit of trivia. Did you know that he is coming back?
What?
Avatar?
No.
No, really?
You know what? You know what?
I thought you were still talking about Mortal Engines.
Hey, guys, just really?
Yeah.
Stephen Lang.
Yeah,
he's got a real knack for coming back from the dead. Hey, I'm not sure, but I've heard that he's coming back in the Avatar sequels, even though his character died in the, his character died in the first movie.
Unbelievable.
I honestly
the next one directed by Schneider, Dean?
Yeah.
He also has a knack for shut up.
So. Apparently not.
I honestly thought you were just messing with me.
I actually wasn't. No, it was just that, I wasn't listening to what you were saying.
I thought you were too.
general way these podcasts work.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to Echoes Before Nodes. Before
you generally Nodes. Just tune out anyways. But yeah, Stephen Lang, he's a great actor. Yeah. If you've ever seen Don't Breathe.
Like, did you know he's coming back for Avatar?
No, I didn't know that, Dean. Tell me other like interesting facts that you know.
He just has a knack for coming back.
Yeah, he really
from the
does,
dead.
Doesn't he?
I saw you were messing
wait,
with
what?
Him.
Yeah, I
hang
really
on.
Did.
There are 5 Avatar films now. I thought there were only going to be 4.
Including the first one?
Including the first one. 4 sequels.
There is 4 sequels. Whoa. There's more tad bits of information that you're getting. Look at that. Look at
you
go.
There's 4 sequels.
Yeah. I didn't know that. Dean, I didn't know that at all.
Did you know Stephen Lang's in all of them?
But I thought he died.
we could
actually do this for an hour and a half.
You really could.
Yeah.
And we
we're not going
it.
To.
Carry on, Jason. They
anyway.
Blew up Skyhaven.
Yeah.
Stephen Lang isn't dead in Avatar.
I promise I'll listen.
So they blow up Skyhaven. But you guys should watch Don't Breathe. It's really good. He's really like full on. He's like the bad guy in that movie.
What
it's,
year was that
just,
movie?
Oh, man, it's only 2016. Come on.
All right. That's
come
good.
On.
I like it. No, I like it. It's good.
Fair enough.
I thought that was with, is that with Ryan Reynolds?
No, it's
what's
not
the one
with
where Ryan Reynolds is buried alive?
That's called Buried?
That makes sense.
It does.
Apparently, he didn't die in that one.
No, Don't Breathe has got Jane Levy in it. And it's directed by the guy that did the remake of the remake of Evil Dead. It's a horror movie. You'll love it, Paul. You'll love it. It's one of those like house, like Panic Room kind of movies.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Is Panic Room a movie as well?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay. Stephen Lang's great. In it.
Cool.
What no, he's not.
Comes back from the dead. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyways.
Land the plane.
So Trike is on the thing. He dies or seemingly dies, but I'm pretty sure he's meant to come back for the sequels if they were going to make sequels, but I doubt it very much. I'd actually like to see a sequel.
Me
but
too.
Anyways.
But I feel like it's going to be the same thing that happened to like I Am Number 4. Where the first movie didn't do too hot, but the story is cool, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think so. So anyways, so Hester, Tom and Anna join up with all the anti-traction league in the settlement that is what is the name of that settlement? It is
Shangzhou.
Yeah, so it's like the former like it's formerly China, but it's like the Asian led Shanggao. Is that
Shanggao? Shanggao? Whatever.
I don't know. So they're joined up with them, and then we learn that Thaddeus has created the WMD.
Medusa.
Yep. The Medusa, yep. And he's going to wage war on
the shield wall of Shang Zhao.
Yeah, the static civilizations, which I never fully buy into why he wants to wage war. Like, what is he going to earn?
It's because it's territory that no one was allowed. Like, no one can break through. And because London is on such a supply lack, he's like, I build this weapon. I blast this wall apart. I've got an entire new land to hunt. He's genuinely just doing it for the survival of London.
The grass is always greener kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but he can't see over really the wall, so he can. Does he actually know that it's better?
He's winging it.
100% no. Yeah.
He's completely, He's just optimistic.
He believe enough.
Yeah, but his heart's in the right place.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It is. It's in the
it's
right
such
place.
Such a sad
just,
scene when he dies.
Yeah.
How
such a cool guy.
Awesome.
What a good dad.
Was that weapon?
It was kind
of
cool.
It was sick. I got the same feeling I got when you watch Attack of the Clones for the first time and Jango Fett leaves those mines in the asteroid field.
Oh, yeah.
The same feeling you had when you watched that, like disappointment and sadness?
Yeah,
sadness.
That's what I felt.
Annoying.
100% I felt disappointment.
Regret.
So, yes, you're right.
Fiscally irresponsible.
Why wasn't it better? Yeah.
No. You know that really rad, like that... Wow, weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, okay,
so the weapon
enough.
Was the same, yeah.
Weapon was
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're pointing out another unoriginal idea.
Wow.
I was thinking, you know when in Lord of the Rings in the Return of the King when the tower falls and it sort of explodes halfway through?
Oh, yeah.
I kind of felt like that. But a lot of this felt like Lord of the Rings to me because just the aesthetic, everything about it kind of felt very Lord of the Rings-esque. And I think that's a little bit to its detriment, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, well, clearly the reason why it's very Lord of the Rings-ish is because Christian Rivers, the director, was the head of art department on all the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movies and...
Yeah,
everything Peter Jackson's been doing,
and
basically.
it definitely shows. And the very fact that I was watching some behind the scenes stuff, and it was interviewing Peter Jackson, and they were saying that he basically directed pretty much like you know parts of the movie and stuff, and even Christian Rivers has sort of gone like he's gone public and said that the movie is a collaboration and it's not really his own movie.
Wow,
because he
and
cannot
he's
direct.
Looking
right?
forward to doing his own movie, kind of thing. So he said it in like a really nice way, but he kind of was like, oh, well, it's not really my movie because it was written by Peter Jackson and it was always going to be Peter Jackson directing it. But then he got really busy and was like, oh, I'll just give it to Christian and he'll direct it. And he did like some of it. But then Peter Jackson sort of came in as like a second unit director.
Was it one of those interviews like, oh, so what's it like to be, you know, a director now? It's like, oh, yeah, really great. I'm looking forward to it.
That was basically Yeah, he's like, I'm looking forward to doing my own movie. He pretty much said that. Like, and it was a very hands-on producer by the sound of it.
But the most impressive thing about this movie is definitely the art. Department, like the visuals, all the design elements, the way the characters look, the way the ships and cities and just everything in it looks awesome.
The
characters
amazing. Yeah.
suck.
Yeah.
And every time you're in a room in a practical set with characters, it feels like a B-grade movie. Feels like I'm watching an episode of Doctor Who or something. Because it's like all that imagination, all the imaginative bits.
And we know how much you hate Doctor Who.
It works for Doctor Who because that's what it is.
But that's what this
Doctor
is.
Doctor Who doesn't, shouldn't. Well, no, because it's got way better special effects and a way bigger budget. It should have been better.
That's fair. And I think that's a valid statement to an extent. All bar Shrike. Yeah. I think Shrike is definitely.
Shrike, yeah.
Is
for
definitely
sure. That's
the
where
best.
All the development went.
Yeah, like that character is just done so well. And like I said before, I think that this movie is so much better because of that character and like the darkness and the like the morbidity of that character when it's introduced is just it actually makes this movie way more deeper than what it would be if that character was not in the movie at all.
And that Jason for you was enough to save this movie.
It just saved it for me and made me enjoy the movie. And when that character died, I was like, oh, damn.
Oh.
Like,
did you hear though?
Yeah. I don't know. What were you going to say, Paul? Sorry.
Similar to his character in Avatar, he might not be it.
What? His character in Avatar is not dead?
Well, funnily enough, he's scheduled, and also another fact, there's four new ones.
There's
I've never seen
the best thing about podcasting is that you can't see my hand gestures.
So moving on to where the story is actually at currently.
What happens next?
So next we have Hester and Tom sharing a moment while the city's being bombarded.
Yeah.
With the Medusa thing.
Medusa.
And they're like, by the way, she's had this necklace the whole time.
Shrike
gives her back her necklace. And I kind of, I thought at that moment, because they're like, oh, is there something that your mother had given you that might be able to be a key to stop this weapon of mass destruction? And that's the very reason that Anna finds her in the first place, because somehow they're working together, or somehow she knows what was going on.
Yeah, so Hester's mum was feeding the anti-traction league gear and information and stuff.
Yeah.
And said to her, because they were such good friends, she was like, if I die, find Hester.
Yeah.
And that's what Anna's been trying to do for the last 6 months.
The other thing, it needs, like, she needed six to conveniently forget years. About it.
Probably
six
years.
6 months.
Oh, yeah. Let's say 6 months.
But yeah, no. She
no,
needed
years.
To conveniently forget about it, because otherwise it's too easy. It's like, oh, is there anything your mother gave you? It's like, no, all she gave me was this necklace. Well, yeah. That's what it is then.
When you think about it, though, she lost it straight away. So, she ran into the swamp, lost the necklace, and then that's it. She never had
that's
it since
true.
Then.
She did. Yeah.
Right.
Shrike like, took it off
as
soon as he found her.
For the whole time.
Yeah.
And then she has like the mini epiphany by looking at the mural and sees like the logo or whatever on her necklace. And she's like, yep, okay. That's what the key is, and it's a USB basically.
But somehow they did a better job than Lucy, and they made the USB look a little bit unique and a little bit futuristic, and not just a USB.
Yeah, that's
true. US better.
Yeah, US better.
You're welcome. So, you're welcome.
Wow.
So yeah,
you can keep that.
They have a USB that can shut down the weapon of mass destruction, and so their plan is suddenly in motion, and they're ready to fly off with the anti-traction fleet.
No, the fleet was destroyed. The opening shot of Medusa blew it up.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But what there's also like their group, though.
There's a couple of little ships. Little
there's Anna Fang and her merry men.
Yeah.
I think.
Anna Fang, basically. The techno Viking. Rose's sister from The Last Jedi.
First mate, good looking, I think his name was.
Yeah, Captain Hotbod.
The dude with the long hair. Yes. My role here is to look attractive and question everything and look attractive while I'm doing
nailed it.
I feel like it's actually just Anna Fang and the red shirts, because it's like, yep, okay, we're all going in. We're going to one at a time die, and we're supposed to care for these characters, because it's like, oh no, there goes
that Captain
guy.
Captain Hotbod didn't die.
Didn't he?
He crashed, but London just drove past them.
Which one?
The Techno Viking's dead. Rose's sister is dead.
Oh, yeah.
Fang dead. But the
Captain.
The other fellow is fine.
Did he?
The other dude.
He crashed, but he crashed like in the distance, and they were fine.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Okay. Well, that character. I really cared about that character.
Yeah.
Not so much that I paid attention to what
I genuinely like this whole sequence. I have a weird affinity for like. It's going to sound weird. Roll with me. Shut up.
Except for, like, for the World Predator. War.
Shut up. I have an affinity for like World War One, World
John
War
Mayer?
Two stuff and things that do. Well, yes. And things that do that well. I think that's why I like that Crusader sequence in Robin Hood. I was like, this is really clever. And I dig this. I love the fact that they were flying towards a mobile London. They fired all the spotlights up and then just started putting like anti-air rounds into the sky. I'm like, this looks awesome. This genuinely looks like, you know, when the Germans were coming in to bomb London. And like, you've got that anti-air, very World War II feel to it.
That's cool.
I liked that.
I was fascinated by the visuals in this. Like it's
a beautiful
visually
movie.
Stunning.
Yes.
Like it is a fantastic looking movie. And
very well
absolutely,
done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cannot disagree with
and
that.
And I was really surprised to find that they actually used a lot of practical models for it. And
they actually made
a lot of the, like, the actual ships and that they actually made and did them as miniatures. Not
they Star Wars'd it.
Yeah. Yeah. They fully did. And
that's cool.
The Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah.
Lord of
the Rings did. Like the I think that's the problem with The Hobbit as well, or one of the many problems with The Hobbit, is that it all feels very fake as opposed to Lord of the Rings, where everything had, it just felt grounded in a reality that works so much better than having completely
so
CGI. Yeah.
100%. I thought it was history, like historical. Thought it was all fact.
Lord of the Rings? Yeah, man. It is.
I thought it all happened.
Yeah, of course.
I hated history after that.
It's in the Middle Ages.
Films don't exist.
They had
Middle Ages. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. They had all the Crusades, and then they had all the battles with Mordor, and then we have First World War, and we just go on from then. Yeah, so
he's right, you know,
for sure.
Yeah, I know. Mm. Yeah. I'm pretty good with my histories.
Yeah, you're like the Terrence Howard of history. We've been lied to all our lives. Yeah, Jasonology right here.
Yeah.
Jasonology.
Middle Earth happened in between the Crusades and World War One. That's why we don't... They'll call it the Black Plague, but that's because all texts were lost.
It's the Dark Ages because it's when Mordor was coming in.
That's right.
Like, that's exactly. Sweeping across the land. So, getting back to this movie, we have the final showdown, which it kind of just goes the way you're kind of expecting. There's nothing there. Like, all the red shirts die. Anna Feng, she dies as well, but she has a moment before she dies, which is, it's a bit silly. Like
the Jesus moment?
Well, it's like she just sacrifices, like her whole sacrifice kind of thing. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those like the visual kind of like symbolism of her just like, yep, dying and then arms out, falling away into the smoke.
Yeah.
Just disappearing. It was like reverse Jesus.
Yeah, that's true.
Jesus.
I get that. it's like a horror movie. but I don't really like it. I just found it a bit hollow in that scene. And then you had Thaddeus trying to make his escape because now he doesn't really care about London or whatever, and it's about to fall. So he's about to fly away and...
Oh my gosh, London has fallen.
London has fallen and Gerard Butler comes out of nowhere and he's like...
Bourbon and poor choices.
This for me felt like a movie that Gerard Butler should be in.
Oh, he should have been in this.
It wasn't that bad.
He could have played Thaddeus in this.
No, it was pretty camp.
Yeah.
No
could you
way.
Imagine? Him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I could.
That'd be cool. Or the the museum curator, dude.
You know who would have been good as Thaddeus? Ben Mendelsohn.
No, because he's done too many.
I see what you're doing. Hugo Weaving was great.
Ben Mendelsohn needs to do a good guy. I'm sick of seeing him as a bad guy. I want it like he seems like such a nice guy in person. Like everything that I've seen.
He really is a good mate.
And we have talked about this before on the podcast.
He's our number one fan.
Yeah, he is our number one fan.
He doesn't know it yet, but he is.
If you know him, please, we are on the Ben watch. We're trying to get in contact with him.
He especially loves how we misspell his name in Facebook posts.
What?
It's fantastic.
Did we really?
Will you check it out?
Come on, Jason. We're never going to befriend Ben Mendelsohn. How are we ever going to get him on here?
Like, I'm sure I
checked
it.
Maybe double check,
like,
see
I
how many H's he has in his name.
I definitely sure. I'm sure I checked the spelling on that one because I was like, I can't spell this wrong.
And yet,
I probably did spell it wrong.
I think it was like H-H-O-N, S-H-O-N or something.
You put two E's in his first name.
Bean Mendelsohn.
Bean Mendelsohn. Yeah.
Be ministered. But anyways, so yeah, as anyone that's listening that's listened to the podcast before, you may have heard us talk about Mendelsohn. And you may realize that that we are big fans of his. And like we just don't want to see him typecast as a baddie forever. I really want to see him as a good guy again.
Real talk, Ben.
Yeah.
When you listen to this, you should do a podcast and you should call your podcast It's Raining Ben. Carry on.
It's Raining Ben.
Yes.
Yep. You're welcome, Ben Mendelsohn. You know what? I'm going to tweet that to him right now.
Yeah.
Please legit, do. I'm doing it.
Maybe
right.
You can do a podcast with us, and it would be like Mendel and Sons.
Should I tweet it from the Nerds Before Birds Twitter account?
Yeah, do it. Do it.
Okay,
for sure. Okay,
done.
Please.
But yeah, so yeah, I'd like to see him be something other than the bad guy, because he seems so nice. And I was watching a thing today, actually. I think I shared it with you, Paul.
Yeah.
With him going through, like, breaking down his roles and things like that. And just, like, just the way that he talks about his roles and that, he just genuinely has a love for being an actor and being in these films and like just a real fanboy kind of attitude. And I really like that.
That's
and
awesome.
I want to see that in a role that he plays instead of playing like always a bad guy. But yeah, yeah, that's enough.
I reckon he could play a great good guy on Nerds Before Birds podcast.
Oh, he definitely could. So
for sure.
Again,
here we go. For
if
sure.
You're listening,
and
you know Ben Mendelsohn.
when you're listening, but yeah. This is what I've written. Random thought, but if you ever did a podcast, it should be titled "It's Raining Ben." Keep up the great work.
Yeah, yeah.
Done.
Tweet.
Also,
done.
Subscribe.
And it's done.
Oh, locked. Please do
never
tag me again.
His last post, I feel like, dude. Yeah. His last post was like July, so we're okay.
I can't see that getting through to him.
Hell
but anyways, it's worth a try.
We do need to get some pretty significant, like, prestige Patreon supporters behind us.
Yeah.
Definitely.
We'll just basically
$1 a month is great, but
we'll come up with podcast titles for them, tweet them randomly, shotgun approach, someone's going to see it.
For
and
sure.
then it's going to be like,
all right, next week, shout out to Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Hemsworth.
Anyway, so getting back to this podcast that we're currently doing.
Oh, yeah.
What are we doing?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So he didn't actually die in Avatar.
No, he didn't. He's going to be in the sequels.
Sequels?
Yeah, there's going to be four. Did you know that? There's going to be four sequels of Avatar. Yeah, crazy. They must.
It's good.
Stephen
we
got to
get behind James Cameron. Yeah. Dude's running out of money.
Once again, all my hopes of my stuff up being cut from the podcast.
No.
Flushed away.
We made a shirt out of one of your stuff ups.
Yeah, we did.
And I sense another one coming.
Did you know?
Did you know? This is your fact?
Coming back.
This is my fact.
Oh, man.
Anyways, so we're getting back to our podcast that we're currently in, Mortal Engines. So Hester Shaw and Tom is flying now because he's a pilot and
he's an aviator
because he got a jacket.
They sewed the that through the plot enough that makes sense.
You know what I thought when he went back to get that jacket? Because he like there's a moment that's like the big lead up to the big climax when they're just about to all fly out to a certain doom.
Yeah.
And he sort of takes a moment to stop and he sees some jackets hanging up and he walks in and he picks up the jackets and dusts it off or whatever and puts it on and he's like, just a big moment. And Hester's like, is he coming? And she like looks around. And I thought like it'd be really funny is if they just left without him. They're like, oh, he's not coming. Okay.
Or if one of the dudes walks out of the pub and he's like, hey, where's my jacket?
Yeah, exactly.
Good to know where his priorities are.
I know.
Yeah, like
it's
the world's ending, but hey, look, a new jacket.
New jacket.
Good time for a wardrobe change.
Did you not understand the symbolism, what it meant? It meant so much.
And, and there was another problem with this scene, actually, too. A little bit earlier, they're like, man, the whole fleet or whatever, everyone, like, get ready. We're going to fly off and take off and go to war with London. So everyone runs off, including Anna Feng's group. They run off.
Yeah.
And then next, the London fleet goes up. The London fleet explodes.
London fleet doesn't exist.
No. Oh, not the London fleet. You got me there. Oh, you got me there.
Shouzo fleet goes up.
The anti-traction
you and your
league
mistakes.
Fleet.
You fool.
My goodness. Yeah. Glad I never made any.
So anyways, that the anti-traction league fleet goes up, right? They all explode and then Anna Feng and her group get into ships and go again.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you remember that in the movie? Because they all like suit up and run off, and then they suit up and run off.
I do remember that.
I'll be honest. I was checking out pretty significantly at this point.
Oh, you were checking out by the time she stabbed Hugo Weaving.
I was checking out at the butthole.
How cool is that opening bit, though, when she runs back to the city, the Predator city approaches, and then like the whole city kind of folds up into like 12 different things and just legs it. That's cool.
Yeah, they all like separate. That's pretty cool.
That opening sequence was exciting. That was full on.
It was exciting. Yeah.
Going back to it, because that is the moment where like I had zero expectation and that one scene lifted the like, oh, I was like, I was thinking this was going to be so good after this opening scene. It's like, yes, if this is what this movie is, if it's like the Pacific Rim of cities eating cities, this is going to be so good and I'm going to have a ball.
Freaking
and then that was the only freaking city hunt thing that happened. And that was it. That's
true,
all
actually, when you really think
trailer,
about it.
The trailer, so rare. The trailer kind of misled that. I kind of felt like we'd get a lot more of that action.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, it did seem like there was going to be more and more of the city hunting things. But I kind of, like I said in the beginning, I didn't really ever buy into the city hunting thing. Like, practically at working, like, it just seemed like... I don't know. I don't buy into the whole mechanical city, and that's where the problem lies. It just does.
Again, thankfully, everything else in this movie was very believable. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's it. That's the only thing.
Salty old man.
That wasn't as bad as Jurassic World. So
let's finish. Basically, they blow London up. No, they don't.
Yeah.
What do? They blow the weapon up. They stop the weapon.
Yes.
They blow up the weapon, London surrenders, and Thaddeus' ship gets taken down and it crashes, and Hester gets away. She flies off with Tom, and the London runs over Thaddeus, who is in the front seat of the pilot
classic
thing. And then...
But he comes back for the sequel, so...
Of course, he'll be back for the sequel.
He'll be back, though, because they didn't blow up the whole ship.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's like the tail end of the ship.
They only crushed a little bit of the front, so I reckon he'll be back.
It's still fine.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's back. If there was going to be a sequel, I feel like his character could have lived on.
Hugo Weaving has a tendency of coming back from the dead in movies.
Yeah, you know who else has a tendency of coming back from the dead in movies?
Who, Jason?
Stephen Lang.
He's Stephen Lang. Really?
The guy from Avatar. The guy from Avatar.
He's back in the Avatar series.
He's going to come back in the four sequels.
Can I say that the guy who played the very Viking-looking fella, Nils was his name, by the way. Nils Lindstrom.
Who? Nils, right. Yep. That makes
the
sense.
The guy who played him, Leifur Sigurdsson, I wish this movie came out well before they said, hey, we're going to cast for The Witcher, because he would have made a perfect Geralt of Rivia. He looks like him.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
He definitely does. Yeah.
I feel like he has just as much star power as Henry Cavill as well.
People wouldn't have lost their mind if they said, this is the guy who's going to play Geralt. And they're like, fantastic. Yeah.
I feel like they would have lost their minds regardless.
No.
I feel like when people announced that Heath Ledger was going to be the Joker, people lost their minds. Even like, again, this might be a little bit controversial, but Ben Affleck as Batman, people just went crazy.
Nuts.
And I think he wasn't a bad Batman. In Justice League, he was terrible
I've said it again and again. In Batman vs. Superman, he was the best thing about, the only really good thing about that movie, basically.
That and the credits. In
my opinion, anyway.
I thought he was a good Batman, and if he wasn't phoning it in for Justice League, then it would have been a good, like, he would have been good in it. But he just, you can tell he just has no interest in that series. Hence why he's probably not going to be back.
But with Henry Cavill and The Witcher, even if it got bad rep and bad publicity, it's still publicity. And The Witcher movie wasn't even on my radar, and it probably would never have been had Henry Cavill got cast, and all the news reports and everyone freaking out about that.
That's true.
And so now how many people are going to go see it?
But if they came out and said, I think everyone was so angry was because of like, how no one can envision Henry Cavill as Geralt. Oh. And they've done the screen tests and he just looks like Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah.
Like, it still doesn't work. They come out and say...
I don't think that was a good idea to release those screen tests.
Very bad.
I just think it was just... It's so bad. Like, it doesn't show anything of the character, and him just walking up and almost smirking at the screen, it just seems so...
Yep.
Just wrong. It just...
It's like they were like, we need to do some damage control. This slightly worked for Jared Leto with the Joker, so this should be good. I see nothing bad coming from this. And then the worst thing, it just sucked. But if they said, this is the guy that we've got for The Witcher, everyone's like, I can see it. This is great. Great casting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think people would have been as keen to, like, it just it wouldn't have had the same draw.
I don't think you understand how big the fan base for The Witcher is.
There is a massive fan base.
It's humongous.
It is.
It's the game.
But it's not the same as general... audience population.
Yeah, but
which is what they're going for.
Think about
when
all the superhero movies were coming out. Someone had to drive that populace.
Totally, but you can't just target one specific market.
Yeah, you can.
When market for like not for a massive budget. Okay.
Shut up. That's why.
Yeah. You need to reach the masses with that big a budget behind a film.
Yeah, I see.
It's the unfortunate thing.
You get about, a triple A actor behind it, then it definitely increases its marketability and stuff like that.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, well.
Anyway, so getting back to this podcast.
That is an interesting. That was a little bit too serious.
Yeah.
What the hell happened?
Someone might be passionate about The Witcher. We don't know who.
So actually I've forgotten a whole character in this whole conversation about Mortal
Engines.
Was
it Stephen Lang's character Shrike?
No, I did not forget him.
Hey, fun fact about Stephen Lang.
I forgot Catherine Valentine, who is the daughter of Thaddeus Valentine.
No, you didn't forget her. She was a nothing character.
And she was like in the background the whole time, and her and Tom seemed to have a bit of chemistry at the beginning. And and we also forgot that Hester Shaw has a massive scar on her face the whole way through this movie.
We were waiting till you finished summarizing it before we started talking about the actors.
No. Well, I'm still trying to finish the summary because the whole way through there's sort of this this teen sort of love triangle thing going on with Catherine Valentine, Tom, and Hester. So,
would you like to hear a fun little story about Catherine Valentine?
No,
yeah, for me. Sure.
So one thing that
you do.
So Catherine Valentine has a knack for dying in movies and coming back in sequels.
Oh my goodness! I don't want to tell you anymore.
Nah, do it.
No, go
this is possibly one of the other reasons why, I was kind of checking out of this movie, and it was a personal thing that you guys wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
As soon as the Catherine Valentine was introduced in the first 5 or 10 minutes, I couldn't put my finger on it at first. I was like, where do I know this actress from? Like, what else has she been in? Turns out, after looking hardly anything, but it wasn't that I recognized her from a movie, is that I actually legitimately recognized her because I know her.
Really?
Because I went to school with a film school. Her name, actress name is Lila George. I went to film school with her. She was in my year. We didn't have heaps to do together, but like to do, you know, we didn't have heaps of classes or anything.
That's a shame because she's really hot.
I feel like she didn't like me.
Well, and did you keep telling her that Stephen Lang didn't die in Avatar?
Yeah, she just wasn't that amused, especially because Avatar hadn't come out yet.
Yeah, but
actually, it had.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So anyway, like this movie because you went to film school?
No, because, okay. Because
she was mean
it's
to you.
It's super weird.
She didn't
it was
like
a surreal. Yeah, exactly. I didn't like this because she doesn't like me. No.
Screw you, Lila. She sucks. I'm going to say it flipped the bird. So,
Yeah.
Sorry, carry on.
I
showed you.
No, so she was pretty cool. It's just, we just didn't have heaps to do with each other. Like,
yeah.
I was dating her friend for about a month in film school. And I think, like, after we broke up, it got weird. But,
right.
Yeah. No, but she, it's just really, as the first time it's happened to me before, and it's a really surreal, weird thing watching a big blockbuster film like this and actually legitimately knowing somebody in it.
Yeah,
it's like,
pretty cool.
What? This is, that's Leela. Like, I know her. And I was talking to my mate because he helped me out on a school project and he met her as well. I was like, do you recognize her? I was like, she's such and such. And yeah, it just blew our minds.
Yeah, wow.
Like, oh, there you go. So do it was really interesting.
On a non-weird level, it's a bummer that you guys didn't keep in touch because I couldn't think of a better special guest for a podcast about Mortal Engines.
I actually did check. Well, we are on the like Cine Film School Facebook page together and all that.
Well, there you go.
I don't have her as a friend. And it's like, oh, it feels like kind of bad just, you know, adding her as a friend now. But yeah, no. Cool girl.
That's really cool.
Didn't really have heaps to do with each other. But she also, her dad is Vincent D'Onofrio as well. So
really? I was going to say, because I'm not sure if I've
mentioned
her last name.
Mentioned
was
D'Onofrio.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's, and I only know that because a teacher, I feel like she would have liked to keep that under wraps. Like she was at Sydney Film School trying to keep like, you know, somewhere that people wouldn't know her.
She's Kingpin's daughter.
She's Kingpin's
daughter.
That's
amazing.
And so, like, I only know her because a teacher kind of like just, you know, that one like secret out and she's like, oh, I just found out your dad's Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oof.
And then, yeah, she was like, yep.
Well, why was she at Sydney Film School?
Probably just because she wanted to be somewhere that, you know, she wasn't like known or that's like fair. She didn't fair have enough to yeah, live up that to her dad's expectations or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd never asked her about it. But yeah, it was just really cool.
That is cool.
Interesting.
Very
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Fun fact.
That but anyway, and we completely forgot her from the
yeah, we completely forgot about her in the podcast.
Yeah, she was crap. No, okay. I liked her. She was a good character.
Yeah. So, like, her character, like, I thought her character was pretty good, but ultimately,
I actually thought she did a great job.
Yeah.
Really.
Didn't really add much to the plot, though. And then like, so, but they did have like this semi love triangle between her character and Hester Shaw and Tom.
I feel like also towards the end, there was a little bit of a love square, with Tom's friend Bevis.
Because they
just disappears.
Like, paired
you don't
up
see him at all.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, and then also you got Shrike. So it's like a love pentagon.
It's a love pentagon.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
And then there was also the guy who was going to buy Hester. So really.
Oh, of course. Yeah. He was there too.
The meat boy.
Oh, yeah. Love it. This alarm again.
Anyway, so yeah, that sort of ends with Tom and Hester getting together, and there's the most cheesiest line in the world.
Aww.
When she turns around when they're flying off and she's like, I'm coming with you. It like ends the movie. That's the end of the movie. It's her moment when she realizes that she can have love and all that kind of stuff because she's rejected people this whole time and she didn't want to be close to people or with people. And suddenly she realizes that she wants to be with Tom. So she flies off into the sunset and that's the end of the movie.
That's it.
So that's it. Dean, you hated this movie. Out of Birds, what did you give it for your final rating?
I wasn't so much that I hated it. It's just that it
you were
was
disappointed.
It was such a inconsistently good movie. There were good bits in it, but every time there were two characters talking in a real, like, there were just really weird, like, cheap moments in production, in the production budget, I feel.
Yeah.
And like did you notice how many, like, how there was more dialogue spoken off screen than on screen? Like, the script was rewritten halfway through production and all the lines were like, everything was ADR, and there was so many moments where what they were saying wasn't matching up with what their mouths were saying.
I noticed that with a lot of Anna's friends, and I was like, maybe it's like a Goldfinger situation where, because it was a very big kind of Scandinavian cast, maybe like they just weren't delivering the lines correctly and they got someone to dub over.
Could have been a bit of that, but there was also like, you know, clearly it was how Leela was happening to Leela as well. Like, if, like half her lines were
lining up. Like Lord of the Rings, they had something like, it was like 80% of that was ADR because of all the effects. Because you've got like wind machines, you've got like all these kind of craziness. They even shoot in slow motion for a lot of it. So that's all ADR'd. Like Kate Blanchett's role when she's like walking through, like Galadriel's walking through like the garden, and it's all in slow motion, but she's talking normally, and that would have been so all ADR'd as well. And maybe that's done, part of it.
It's done really well in the Lord of the Rings, but here it felt really cheap and too noticeable. And there are too many moments like that that just pulled me out of the movie. Knowing Leela probably didn't help, as like it pulled me out of the movie. There were things that just, you know, I couldn't get back into the movie like I wanted to after all that.
Yeah, not to take that away from you, Dean. That feeling of directly knowing someone, it doesn't just apply to you for this film. I'm actually quite good friends.
Ooh.
With Hugo Weaving.
Oh, your one time that you went to the football and you see me.
There was one time where I went to a Sydney Swans game, and whilst slightly intoxicated waiting for a train, this thing bumps me from behind and I turn around. And then Hugo Weaving goes, I'm sorry, friend. He doesn't. He just says, sorry, mate.
Is this a real story?
Yeah, this is a real story. I've heard this story before.
No way.
I bumped into and then had a pretty decent chat to Hugo Weaving at a train station in Sydney.
Wow.
We just shot the breeze. We had to wait for like 15 minutes for a train. And it was packed.
You're joking. You talked to Hugo Weaving for 15 minutes.
Whilst slightly buzzed.
What?
I was kind of drunk.
This is his literal 15 minutes of fame.
You were joking.
It's probably about 1 minute and he walked past me. But I wasn't that drunk. Yeah, two things I took away. One, very nice guy.
Weirdly, I want your autograph now.
And there's like a hard cut to like the actual interaction. And he's like, Paul's like, Hugo, how are you doing?
In my head, it's like, oh, hey, that's okay. Oh, you're Hugo Weaving. I really enjoy the work that you're in. You know, how's your night going? But in reality, it's like, Hugo Weaving, Elrond, cast a spell. Do it.
Where's your sword? I see you in the Matrix. He kept changing train platforms. It was weird. He kept saying, stop following me. I don't know.
But he lives in Black Hills. Ed. And his security dogs are called Chipper and Evangeline. No. But legit, I
and they bite really hard.
And now I'm not allowed in 500 feet. But no. Nice guy.
You have a restraining order too? No way.
Hey, Leah. I've just kind of hung out with him at a train station for like 15 minutes.
I fully thought that you were just ripping on me for name dropping, but that is awesome.
Was it like literally?
Yeah, it was insanely packed and the trains were delayed. So, and no one's going anywhere. So we were genuinely just stuck there. And he is actually a very lovely guy.
Oh, that's so cool, man.
I don't think too many other people noticed it was him either.
Yeah.
And also, he was massive.
No way.
He is a absolute unit.
Yeah, he's a very tall guy.
Not even tall, thick. Like, because this was a few years ago, so he was either
really
doing work for... Was he in The Hobbit?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in The Hobbit.
Yeah.
He either had to have been doing something Hobbit-related... But he was just in really good shape.
Really?
He was a big guy.
I always thought he was just a little bit lanky or something, but wow.
No.
That's cool.
No, he was very muscular.
He's had to do a lot of action stuff. Like think of, you know, Matrix and everything.
Yeah. That's
about it.
Yeah. That's a long list there. Share a little bit more of your knowledge.
Oh, that's three movies.
The Matrix.
Yeah.
Don't forget the animated one.
Don't forget Transformers.
He had to run in Mortal Engines.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Transformers.
He's done
a
lot of action.
Oh, all that voice work.
Yeah. Another movie where you think Megatron's dead.
My goodness.
Shut up. I've been playing Fallout.
Megaton.
Anyways, so
Sorry.
So anyway, how many birds do you give it, Dean?
I get that reference. Yeah.
And it is birds.
I'm going to give this, it is birds. Thank you for reminding me.
Two stars.
Oh, V for Vendetta. There you go. I'm going to give this two birds. You weren't far off, Paul.
You know that actually, sorry, you did say V for Vendetta, and I just have a little tad bit of information. James Purifoy? Purifoy? I don't know how you say his last name. He was originally cast as V for Vendetta, and he actually acted in half the movie behind the mask, and then he got like sick of it and was like, nah, I can't do this anymore, because he was like so fed up because he thought he'd be able to take the mask off once or twice.
That's where you're wrong, bucko.
And then what happened is Hugo Weaving was like then cast, and then they just dubbed over James Purifoy. I don't know how you say his name.
It doesn't matter. He's not in the movie.
Purifoy.
Yeah.
Purifoy.
But yeah.
Classic. Make sure you read the contract before you start.
Read the source material. Because
he almost did a Judge Dredd on it.
Before
like,
you sign it.
Like, kind of kicked up a stink like Steven, not Steven, Sylvester Stallone kicked up a stink about having to keep the mask on for Judge Dredd. And that's why that movie's so terrible, the Judge Dredd. But then when Carl Urban came in, he was like, not the mask's staying on kind of thing.
And then he got cast as the body double for Darth Vader.
That's so cool.
Who did?
What, Hugo Weaving?
No, because he can't take the mask off. It was a joke.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
No.
we'll fix that. Let's reference that one
again.
Make
it look like we're laughing.
Body double for Darth Vader.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, woo.
Whatever.
Because you can't take the mask off. Anyways.
That joke. Oh, man. That joke died almost.
No, but he didn't die. He's coming back.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Yeah. Just like the Darth Vader joke. He's coming back.
Is he coming back?
I'll find my time.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
Anyway, so you're giving it 2.5 birds. That's actually higher than I thought that you were.
Two. I said two.
Oh, two. Stop. Oh, sorry. Stop. I thought by this stage you would have given it an extra half because you usually do.
I do usually warm up, but I'm going to.
We usually get you back into an even pegging by the time we end.
You convinced me.
It's like a game that Jason and I play.
You're planning to convince me. No, two birds. I'm sticking with
three birds, Dean, for you?
Perfect film. Five.
Five, we're done.
Wow, oh, you really like this movie, Dean.
Leah, call me.
Yeah, so two birds for you. Dean, what about you?
Mm-hmm.
Paul.
Yep, Dean, what about you?
No, Paul, what about you?
You idiot.
Paul,
I don't know what to say.
Jesus.
Apparently, Jason makes up my score for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, I mean, I'm never allowed to say anything anyway. So, Dean, do you want to answer for me again?
Yeah, sure. Paul gives it two as well. There you go.
Wrong. I liked it. I thought the visuals were awesome. I liked the fact that they could make London feel like very London-y from all the movies I've seen.
London-y.
It had that London feel as a giant moving land city. I thought Harry Hilmar was really good.
Yeah.
I'd love to see her in a bunch of other stuff. She gives like the dirtiest look.
I'd hate to be on the receiving end of that look.
I like that anyone ever gives. She's like the Julie Bishop of like Norwegian actors. Icelandic actors. Sorry.
Yeah, she's Icelandic. Yeah.
That was rough. She was good. I liked her. I liked the chemistry that she had with the dude who played Tom.
Yeah.
And I just had fun.
Oh, she had some very expressive eyes. I actually felt she did a better job as a character when she had a mask on. Like she was able to, weirdly.
Well, because then you have to just use your eyes and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what would have been really good though,
Even
Dean?
I felt like apologizing.
If she had had to have worn the Darth Vader mask, would have been really good.
There it is.
Because it can't come off.
It's done a Stephen Lang. It's back.
Yeah, because then she would have really had to have acted through it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's like it's your moment to set it up to try and like get payback, right? For this whole episode.
Well done.
So, you know, yeah. I liked it. I'd probably give it like, I'm tossing up between like 3 and 3.5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really did enjoy it. I think I'm going to give it 3.5.
Yeah.
Cool. I had fun.
That's fair.
Fair enough. I'm sad that it won't get a sequel.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a lot of potential with this world, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
So you're only half a bird higher than Dean's, really. So yeah, that's pretty good.
When Jason does the graphic later on, no one listens to the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dean really loved it. 5 out of 5.
How much do you give this? How much do you give this, Dean? I will give it 3 stars. Yeah,
yeah. He's dubbing it over.
Yeah, I really hate it. I'd give it 3 stars.
But.
You always say stars because that's what you usually say anyway.
Yeah, people believe Dean said it that day.
Yeah, it's more convincing. Anyway, so let's get to my review, which I thought this movie was enjoyable. I'm kind of with you, Paul, on this. I enjoyed it, but ultimately it's a little bit hollow. It looks really good. There's a lot of really great things to like about it. But it doesn't quite get where I like as good as what I was hoping it to be. And I'm only going to give it 3 birds, but I wish that they were going to make a sequel. I wish this would have been picked up because I think it would actually make a really good series if they delve a little bit deeper into the whole, sort of like the world that they're creating. But yeah, that's my thoughts.
Cause I feel like even the second one, you could have gone back into the 60-minute war. They could have told a little bit more of that story.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. There's so much potential with this world.
I kind of feel like there was enough story arcs and story elements in this one movie to actually go over like 3, really. And you could flesh things out a bit better, like the characters, for example, and do a lot better stuff. But yeah, the 10-year-old me would have loved this. It would have been a 5-star film if I was a kid. And I think that's more the target audience, film? Potentially. A 5-bird film.
Classic Dean. Yeah,
classic
A 5-bird film. Oh, well, this before birds wasn't around when I was 10. Okay, so whatever.
I'm so glad you gave it 4 stars out of 5 birds.
Oh, my goodness. Damn it, I've said 5 stars. You can cut that in.
Yeah.
Seamlessly.
How many episodes have we been doing? This is about like 31, right? We're at like 31. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, I believe
you're joking.
So.
Yeah.
30 or 31. I don't know. I've lost count.
Yeah, we've been doing this for about 14 weeks.
Man, I better retire.
Yeah. Okay.
Freak.
Anyways, so that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you like the show and you want to support us, you can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds. You can contribute any amount starting at $1 a month. And that just really helps us to keep this thing going and keep the lights on. Otherwise, if you can't support us financially, you can support us through liking us on Facebook and following us on Twitter and sharing us with your friends. If you have friends that you think will like this podcast, feel free to share us around.
Let us know what it's like to have friends.
Share us around. Wait, what am I share saying?
Share us around. How is it? Let us
share
know.
Share all around.
Oh, righto.
Wow.
Take it easy.
Like let us know, like write a review on iTunes or whatever platform you're listening to us on. That'll be great. Like any reviews really help us to get exposure get out there.
Patreon.
Thank you.
I know. I'm just enforcing the Patreon.
Oh, right. You're doing subliminal messages. It sounds like beatboxing underneath, like in a weird kind of beatbox.
Patreon.
Patreon. It's terrible.
Anyway, check it out.
Yeah. I can feel the numbers. The numbers that we currently have are just dropping, right?
No, you can't go lower than 0.
If we get enough Patreon supporters, we'll record an album.
I'll call you back, Mum.
Anyway, so that brings us to the end of this week's show. I hope you enjoyed. Bye.
I don't have a fun fact. Sorry.
Oh, dude.
Merry Christmas.
We can't end until you get a fun fact.
We still got a week out from Christmas.
Oh, dude.